Bruchim Abayim, welcome. Thank you all for coming. A special thank you to Rabbi Kupchik and Rabbi Mitenki for taking time out of their busy schedules. Tonight is an opportunity for us, those of us who belong to the Parents Union, to reflect together with two parents who are also mechanchim, principals in our community, who are our partners, those of us who are still at that stage of life, who are our partners in educating our children. It's an opportunity for us to hear from them a little bit about the concept of chinuch, especially as it relates to adolescence, which is our topic tonight. So to get us started with an introductory comment or reflection, we're going to begin by asking both Rabbi Kupchik and Rabbi Mitenki to reflect on an aspect in their own life, in their own adolescence, in their own development, of something that was memorable to them, had an impact on them, that can be a point of departure for thinking about what can we do, both as parents and as community members, to inspire and to help cultivate the growth among our own children. So, Rabbi Kupchik, why don't you get started? For those who do not know, Rabbi David Kupchik is the principal of the Fassman Yeshiva High School, and Rabbi Leonard Mitenki is the dean of the Idaho County Jewish Academy. Bakasha.
Okay, great. So thank you so much, Rabbi Grant. Honored to be sitting here together with a good friend, colleague, Rabbi Mitenki. And to address the question, I think I want to just say at the outset that when it comes to the word parenting, I think that one of the challenges is that when we become parents, we don't necessarily receive a manual on exactly how to. And we do live in a generation where almost everything that we are involved in has a manual to it. A new gadget that you buy, so many things that we have in our lives, there'll be some form of a manual. And you can even say when it comes to doing a mitzvah, we could open up the Torah and we could figure it out. Well, we go to Rabbi Mitenki, our local Orthodox rabbi, and we ask him, how do we do this? And he'll teach us. But when it comes to parenting, it is trickier. So I think to at least answer the question that Rabbi Brand asked me to address, so one of the things we do is that we try to mimic the way that we were raised. And we try to identify with how, some things that our parents did. Most often it's easier for, a son to think of their father and then daughter to think of their mother, but courage, good relationships, and I was blessed with great relationships with both. But even if I just want to talk a little bit, son, father. So what immediately comes to my mind is someone who is able to establish a healthy line in terms of what the relationship is about. I'm not your friend. I'm something called your parent. I'm your father. He also, in his case, was also a pulpit rabbi and community leader. So it was also a little easier in my case to be able to view him with a certain sense of reverence as well due to the way he lived his life in terms of the community and people that knew him. But at the same time, I don't just think of myself as, well, I was the rabbi's son and he was too busy. I'm able to still connect to the fact that he was that, loving father and the classic father in the sense of taught me how to play ball. At the same time, taught me my bar mitzvah parsha. At the same time, was a go-to when I had questions about what was going on in school. If I didn't understand something in shiur, I knew I was able to have a go-to. I'll just conclude with the following statement, and I think that laid a groundwork for a wonderful kesher. Interesting that both my parents were not outwardly emotional people. However, there were a few times when they got emotional. And this following said a lot. And that is when it was my turn to spend a year learning in Israel, the airport scene, you know, said it all. So they didn't always have to use words. They didn't always have to use words of, you know, as I'm going to school, have a great day, Dovid. Love you. That wasn't their style, but it was understood. It was understood through the time and the quality time. And then they'll give you a little glimpse of, we really do love you. You go to Israel, we'll be emotional about it.
So I'm going to take it a little bit differently than Rabbi Kupchik, even though I did know his father as well and got to work a little bit with his father when I was very young in the Torah department of the World Zionist Organization. But I guess where I want to go back to is a simple story. Something that helped define who I am when I was an adolescent. There was this thing called the Yom Kippur War. And I was in the academy as a student during the Yom Kippur War. And I still remember the scene when the senior class went to Israel during the Yom Kippur War to volunteer. Doing everything from delivering mail to working on farms or kibbutzim. It was a very emotional time when they were leaving. It was a very inspirational time when they were leaving. And it also created for the rest of us, I was not a senior, created for the rest of us the opportunities and responsibilities to take roles of leadership that normally the older kids did. Because it wasn't just the seniors who went to that during the war, it was also the college students. And I was in B'nai Akiva. And all of a sudden, all of the leadership of B'nai Akiva was gone. And we, as younger high school kids, had to step to the plate and help out. And we took over B'nai Akiva, we took over the roles we had, and our parents gave us that flexibility and that freedom to do those kinds of things. And so it was an extraordinary opportunity of leadership. Rabbi Kupchik mentioned the fact that parenting doesn't come with a manual. I agree, but I don't know the last time I ever read a manual, so even if it came with one, I don't think it would do any good. But I do believe that the most important manual we're given is the opportunity to give our children the room to grow, the opportunity to give our children the room to lead, and the responsibility that we have to provide the limits in which they can be safe. That's something that happened when I was growing up, even in that unusual time.
Thank you. One of the questions that we considered in advance is, how do I, as a parent, develop a relationship with a teenager who's growing up in a world which is so different than the world that I grew up in relative to my children, or certainly people who are older than us, grew up in terms of the teenagers from today. So how do we develop a relationship when there is this cultural and contextual gap between us and the kids? Mary, thank you. Want to start on that one?
I think the same way our parents did with us. The culture in which they were raised was very different than the culture we were raised. And every generation thinks that, oh my God, this next generation is in trouble, everything is terrible, and everything is horrific. We have eternal values. Our eternal values are values of family, our values of ethics and morality and Torah and mitzvot and learning. And despite the environment in which they live, we have to keep that going. It goes back to the same kind of thing. You know, there were things, growing up, there were things that were known. It was the way certain language that we used wasn't allowed in the house, or the society used wasn't allowed in the house. Certain television shows weren't allowed in the house. So we've created new technologies and new ways of speaking, and we just have to continue with what we think is real. Rabbi Kupchik pointed it out before. The most difficult word that parents have and had was the word no. No parent ever wanted to be mean to their child. Goes against the rachmanis that's built into all of us. And yet no person can ever be a parent unless if they learn how to say no, because they're providing a safety for children. So we provide safety. We use our seichel. If something doesn't feel right, then it isn't right. And if something feels good, then it's good. And in between is where we have to make the choice.
I think I would just you know, add you know, to the message that the ongoing message, of course, is that there are, you know, that there are certain key principles that should apply in every generation. But you could also add that you know, small things could also be helpful, and in terms of different, if you want to, as Rabbi Brand make reference to it, whether it's a different generation, and that is that you could show interest. So show some interest in perhaps something that is new to this generation that you might not have had when you grew up, but and you have absolutely no real interest in it now, but you see that your child has interest in it. You know, there is this expression that we have in our teachings of mitoch shelo lishma bo lishma, that even if you don't have any real sincere interest in the actual item, but you get involved in it in any way, it could lead to something a little bit more meaningful. So if it's, let's say, something that your child is really interested in, and you might not be as interested, but for the sake of the relationship, you will show a certain either level of tolerance or acceptance, or even participation. I'm sorry to say this in front of Alan Sorsha. I don't have as much passion as I used to for the New York Rangers. You know, as a kid, I went to sleep with that transistor radio, and being able... What is that? Well,
I'm much younger.
I'll read the manual. I'll explain it to you. So, I felt I was able, you know, to even just hear every fourth word and still know exactly what's going on. Okay, but now I don't have, you know, as much of a passion. But I see that my child does. And I said that, okay, they're coming to Chicago February 19th, and we're going. Now, will I be caught, maybe, like some of these rabbis nowadays, learning in a sefer at a stadium? There are some rabbis that it's gone viral. Rabbi Leff, I think, was in London taking his grandson to a soccer game. There's a picture of him learning from an art school sefer, and they make that now into a little good advertisement for Daf Yomi. And Dr. Flug from New York, he's the eye doctor for the New York Islanders. He gets tickets, so he took his kid, but he was there with the sefer, so it becomes one of these things on social media. But nevertheless, I think these are that could still be a response to how do you keep that connection? Show an interest. If you want a relationship with anyone, so show interest. And even if you're deep down, not so, maybe I won't be so amazed by it, but it sends a message to the child. My parent cares.
So maybe just picking up on this, for those who are interested, he spoke a lot about parenting, and he also wrote about parenting. The late great Gaon Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha, in the collected volume of Hespedim, in the beginning he talks about his own life and also about his own perspective on parenting. And he was known to be not just a parent who went to learn with his kids in their high schools and in yeshivas, but he also played ball with them. And he spoke about that idea of going to play ball with them, not as a hechitimtza to convince them to learn the equal amount of time that he was playing ball with them, but as a way of developing a relationship with them. He probably enjoyed playing ball with them too, but I think that was something that he was able to find in common. An issue that maybe some of the parents or we feel at different times in our lives is the question of how to inspire my child if I don't feel inspired at that moment. Tefillah is a big challenge. It's a challenge for children. It's a challenge for adolescents. It's also a challenge for adults. What happens when it's a particular experience of tefillah where I'm there with my child, my adolescent, so they have a unique set of challenges when it comes to tefillah, and I don't feel inspired. So how am I going to model inspiration for my child when I don't feel inspired myself?
Good question.
It's a good thing I sent it to you in advance.
I really think that it's not as complicated as we might think. Parents have to be honest with children. And so if something is difficult for an adult, it's important that the adolescent see it's difficult. But they also see how we deal with that difficulty. So it really goes back to role modeling. Listen, if we want our children to daven, but we don't daven, we send a very clear message to them. If we want them to daven with a minyan, but we daven at home, we send a very clear message to them. But if we want them to daven with a minyan, we want them to daven regularly, we want them to try their best, and they see us trying our best, and we, as adolescents, are very close to human beings, so you can actually explain things to them, that you tell them the difficulties. You say, hey, it isn't always easy. That will inspire them. That will give them the kind of motivation to be, because you're being honest. You're not putting on a show. If you put on the show, they read right through it. So if you can't be inspired, and I don't know too many people who can be inspired every morning when they get up to daven, and I don't know too many men who get up early in the morning when the alarm goes off and say, oh, yippee, I get to jump out of bed and run outside where it's cold and go to a minyan and start my day 45 minutes, an hour earlier than the rest of the world does. But the fact they see you do it, and sometimes you tell them, look, when it's hard, I still do it. That's inspirational.
I think I'm going to, you know, say something similar, but, you know, just maybe using some different words. And that is to validate, and to if you could give your own personal examples from when you were younger, and how you found it challenging in your way, even if it's not the exact same challenge, but you could say something that shows that you understand and appreciate their frustration, share with them what helped you. If we want to use, you know, the example of tefillah, you could share, well, what when I was younger, and or what I still do now, what helps me? So that it says to them, is what Rabbi Matanik was saying, says to them, I appreciate your struggles, I appreciate you're feeling challenged by it. And then also give your examples of what you did. That, I think, also will be a lot more effective than saying, well, if you do A, B, and C, you'll see it's going to change. They're teenagers, and that's main audience for tonight. They don't want to be preached to. They don't want to be told. I think you will get farther in the relationship. You'll get farther in communicating your message by giving your own personal examples. You also could do a number of things. I think that one of the things that has become popular is sending kids to meaningful programs, meaningful organizations, meaningful youth organizations, meaningful summer camps. And that's another way of us, and intentionally selecting the ones that you feel will be inspirational. I don't think you have to take it all on your shoulders, that you have to become their rabbi and their personal teacher for A through Z. I think that it's okay to realize that you offer X, you offer Y, but you're also just one person. And even if, you know, you hopefully team up well, you know, with your spouse, but you're also still only two people and with certain talents. And I think it's important to, when you're tapping in, and you don't have to be as direct as to say, we're sending you to this program and you better come out of it, you know, more meaningful, because we're spending this amount of money on this program and we expect results. But rather, you know, you could say, you know, enjoy, you know, we hope you have a blast. And probably you'll get farther. And then one last thing, you know, even as, you know, one thing that I think, you know, I did as my kids were younger and it came, let's say, to the decision about going to shul on a Friday night, certainly with my sons. And when do you put your foot down? When do you, you know, take your foot back and say, well, this is an important value. You need to come to Minyan with me. You're not a 3-year-old anymore. You're not a 4-year-old anymore. Wait a second. Let's start gauging. I think if you recognize that it could be, you know, challenging, but you might say, listen, but this is important. Let's pick, you know, we'll start with 1 out of every 4. As they get a little older, we'll do 2 out of every 4. You know, you're getting a little older. This is expected of, you know, of you, as what Rabbi Mitenki said at the beginning, in terms of, you know, as you get older, taking on more responsibilities. So I think you're able to maybe do things in a smart way that also could help inspire kids in it, without you having to scream the word, get inspired.
Sometimes our kids make decisions, especially when they're adolescents, that are bad decisions. One of those bad decisions that they sometimes make is they fall into peer groups that aren't necessarily influencing them in a positive way. So here we are, that our goal is not to be their mashgiach. We're not trying to be their rabbi. We're not trying to impose on them. We're trying to set, like Rabbi Mitenki said before, healthy boundaries in which they can make good decisions. But if within those healthy boundaries they find themselves and they're not in a great peer group, so what are some of the ways, how do we go about addressing that peer group that they find themselves in? How do we help them make good decisions when they're not in a peer group that's influencing them for the better?
Sure. Okay, we'll jump into it. One great suggestion or insight even that I could share on this topic and is that we should view our relationship, you know, with our children similar to the way that we hopefully treat our savings account. Hopefully. And that is that the more you're able to put in to your savings account, we'll talk financially, then hopefully at a certain, you know, date when you want to treat yourself to something, do something, then you're able to find money in that savings account and say, ah, look, after 2 years of savings of putting in, I don't know, $2 a day, well, look at that. I actually have, you know, X amount of dollars, and now I could treat myself, or I could treat my family to a trip. And that's called, you know, hey, that was smart. That was something smart that you did. And when it comes to a relationship with children, it works in a similar way. And that is that you... if you put in to your child a lot of, we'll call it right now, things to build the relationship. So that means you put a lot of positive into the relationship. You compliment your kid. You spend some quality time with your with your child. You do certain amount of positive activities and interactions with your child, so that when it comes time to what we'll say make a withdrawal, and the withdrawal will mean, uh-oh, I have to say no. Uh-oh, I have to put my foot down and explain these are the family values. And your concerns, what's going to be the reaction by, you know, me or my wife saying no, it sort of softens the no if you have in there a nice amount of savings. So if you invested properly and you put in, so there, without having to say it, they'll feel that there is this balance, that it's not all about, no, my parent isn't just this no Debbie Downer type of parent, and I wish I had the parents, you know, like the ones next door. But if
they're, I think they say that anyway.
Oh,
experience, I think.
So, my wife has a great line. She has a great line that said when they fetch about the dinner, she says, "That's fine. Go next door and have dinner with them. They probably make a better dinner. Just go. Go ahead." You know, it gets them to start thinking, am I really going to pick myself up? I'm really going to go? Maybe it's not as bad as I really thought it is. So I think that is a that is something we have to realize. That, you know, the word no, I'll say it this way. Throw out a name here. One of my good friends from yeshiva days, Rabbi Yamin Goldsmith, who's the head of SFW, Shalavim for Women. I remember him making a comment to me when we were talking about education, and he said, listen, kids are going to do what kids do, and adults need to do what adults need to do. Fine. Kids will act as kids, but adults need to act as the adults. And yeah, so saying no is really a good thing, but you also still have to do it in a smart way. And if you have been working on the relationship for years, if you've been putting in the dollar a day, you're going to come out, you know, and you're going to come out winning.
I'm going to disagree. One is because I haven't put money in a savings account in years, and the return on savings accounts are lousy. I really think there's no answer. There are just too many variables, and every child is different. And for some children, the warmth is the way to go. For some children, the harsh reality of limits are the way to go. And I don't have a good answer for it. I do think parents need to remember, and this is something I have learned in being principal for a long time, that teenagers rebel. They will rebel until they get a full good feeling that they've gotten the charge out of you in their rebellion. So sometimes what you need to do is react a little stronger about the smaller thing, and then they've been successful. They got the charge out of you. They rebelled. They created their own identity on something small and silly in your eyes, but just really react on it. Other children, it's the big hug. You can't force your children to be friends with certain people. You can't force your children not to be friends with other people. And some children, it just has to be, okay, my friends are going out. They're coming back at 11:30. Sorry, you're coming back at 10:30. I don't want to come back at 10:30. Then you don't have to go out. And other children, it may be, okay, I'll let you do it this time because you've been so good and you've cleared the table every day and put everything in the dishwasher each day. Is that way also? There's no simple answer. And anyone who thinks there's a simple answer, please write the manual.
There's an interesting book and podcast called Radical Candor. For anybody who's familiar, it is a very insightful business model. I wonder if it has some relevance to the parenting perspective, where they talk about, in this podcast, the concept of caring personally but challenging directly. And maybe that's part of what we're talking about here, that we need to communicate both verbally and non-verbally to our kids that we care personally, but we also sometimes need to challenge them directly, whether that's with a no or with a question. You know, as Rabbi Batenki said, a lot of time it depends on the kid. But a lot of kids, if we ask them a question, like Rabbi Kupchik said, if we ask them, do you want to go next door for dinner? Do you really want to hang out with that peer group? Do you want to come back at that hour? Do you want to get behind the wheel in that context? Sometimes, being that they are close to human, they may actually come around on their own to being able to answer those questions. So for some kids...
Rabbi, I I think for some kids, yes, some kids this way, some kids that way, some kids that way. And the beauty of it is God has made sure that every one of your children is different. And generally, he gives you the angel to start with and fools you into having a larger family. Okay? And then by the time you get a little further, I say, oh, my God, how come the first one didn't warn me? So, yeah, it could be. There are kids who will react to the candor, and there are kids who will react to limits, and there are kids who react to the big hug. Teenagers are still a complicated group of whatever they are.
Right. Both of you work in schools. Schools and parents are ostensibly a partnership. So is it ever appropriate for us as parents to have the school be the bad guy and allow the children or the child to push the consequences, to push the boundaries and suffer the consequences at school, and the parents can say, you know what, let the school deal with it? When is that, when are you thinking that's okay for us as parents?
Never.
you need the consistency. It's that famous, you know, it's that famous cartoon where a school calls a family and says, you know, we have a problem with your little child. What's that? Oh, you know, he's stealing pencils from all the other children in the class. You got to talk to him about it. And then the parent says to the principal, you know, I can't believe he's stealing principles. I have so many principles at home that I bring home from the office. Pencils. You know, why should he be stealing anything? You know. So there needs to be that consistency. Then, and I think that there is an art to a parent being able to, at times, you know, even have to say in front of their child, listen, this is the school policy, or this is what's going on, and we support it. Now, if there's an issue, if there's something that they question, I don't always think, and most of the time not, I don't think that a child needs to know that you might have a behind-the-scenes conversation with the school to even challenge what's going on. But I think it is really key to be able for that child to know that there is that equal footing and same message that they get from school, they get at home.
I really think never. I'm not sure if there's more to say about it. So I think the biggest challenge that we have in schools, or schools and parents are not on the same wavelength, and parents or schools decide to take the lead as opposed to working as partners. So I've had, I've been doing it a long time. I've had, I'll give you two stories that maybe will illustrate the challenge. One I've had happen more than once, where a parent calls me up first thing in the morning saying, my child is coming to school late all the time. I know it, Rabbi, I know it, but they refuse to get out of bed. Can you call back my house in 5 minutes and ask for my child and tell them they're in trouble if they don't get to school on time? And my first time I fell for it. After that, I said, no, it's your job as a parent. That was one. The other one happened in one of my first years in school. As a principal, a parent called me up and said, my child, I'm embarrassed to say, but you have to inspire my child to daven. I said, okay, what's the issue? Well, my child won't go to shul Sunday mornings. They're not inspired. I said, when did it start? He said, oh, it's about fourth grade. I said, you know, your child's a senior in high school now. It's a little complicated after all these years. They said, but, you know, maybe the only way I would suggest is, you know, Sunday morning, have your husband take your child to shul with him, and maybe that'll help. But my husband doesn't go to shul. So, you know, what do you want from me at that point? We have to work together. When schools and schools aren't always right. We make some big mistakes in schools. And when we make a mistake, parents should call us on it. Call us on it in a respectful way, not through the child, but give us a direct call. And parents make mistakes. And the schools are pretty scared about telling parents when they're making a mistake. But if we can work together, we support each other, it can work.
What, maybe just for a moment, what happens, how do you navigate from a school perspective when the parents themselves are not on the same page?
I'm going to echo just a similar story. Just the, you know, just this.
Let me take his one. When the parents aren't on the same page, listen, so the school wants what the school wants. Parents, one says yes, one says no. And sometimes the school has put its foot down. I can read you an email from today. Sometimes the school has to put their foot down, and it gets complicated.
Okay.
And remember, you're thinking about parents who are still married. What about the parents who are in the middle of a miserable case where not only are they divorced, but they continue to call each other into court over, you know, the cases. My best case was I was called in two court cases the same summer about parents, mothers who had enrolled their children in Ida Crown. One, the court case, they were divorced. They went before the judge because Ida Crown was a fundamentalist right-wing Orthodox school, and they wanted to stop their child from being destroyed by that right-wing school. And the other was from a parent who called us to court because we were so far left-wing we weren't really Orthodox. And the funny thing is the same judge heard both cases. Okay, but it happens. Sorry.
No, it's just, you know, you reminded me of a similar type of story, and I think people hopefully will gain by just hearing different stories, and that's how we often learn. Is that I remember it was shortly after the Yamim Noraim, and I was standing outside of school, and a parent came over, you know, and said in an accusatory fashion, you know, you didn't prepare my child well enough, you know, how to daven in shul, you know, on whether it was Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. You know, there was my kid sitting right next to me, and he didn't know what to do. And I was so angry with the school. So I, you know, just composed myself, you know, after being a little bit of on the receiving end. But I responded, and I said, you know, parents also play a role in this process called chinuch. And I'll tell you what I do. When I sit in shul and my son sits next to me, I embrace that moment. I embrace the opportunity to show them what we're up to in davening, how we're doing in davening. Obviously, the school taught something. We're not talking as if, you know, they came to school and they said, okay, you know, oh, it's Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, let's learn about Hanukkah. You know, obviously there was some basic teaching, but we use that word partnership. That's a perfect moment to say it's partnership. Look, they taught you what a machzor is. They taught you about this certain key tefillos. Yeah, it's a long davening. It's not easy to follow. Let me take that opportunity. Seize the moment, and use it to teach your child.
Rabbi Graham, before you open up for questions, can I get my soapbox for 1 minute? Because we're talking about davening and about parents. The worst thing that has happened in our community: our high school children who work on Shabbos. Whether they're working for party planners or they're working for the Shabbos groups, and they're not davening with their parents, they're not davening in youth minyanim. And if you want to talk about kids who are learning the wrong messages, of all the boys who are the waiters of all of the party planners, because our people who are making parties want to save a couple of dollars and not hire non-Jewish waiters, there may be one or two who really need to bring the money for the family to have enough money to live. The vast majority of them don't need it for anything significant. And the messages we are setting for the next generation of daveners and of people who are Shomer Shabbos is miserable. So just think the next time you go to a simcha and you see the boys who are serving, ask yourself how many of them davened with a minyan. And I can tell you from the experience I see in my shul, very few, if any. Ask yourselves, the youth leaders of the children's groups that we have, and I was involved in putting up the Eruv in this community, but that's one of our great regrets. How many of those youth leaders have davened with a minyan? And then ask yourself, is the money they're earning worth the messages that we're giving them about the importance of davening and Shabbos? Sorry for the soapbox.
No, I don't think you should be sorry at all. I think one of the things that maybe we as parents need to consider when we have children who are that age or are involved in that is it goes back to the limit-setting question is, you know, if someone's child says to them, I'd like to be waitering this Shabbos morning, they say, okay, great. Well, when are you going to daven? If that waitering job starts before Nate's, so then maybe the answer needs to be no. But if that waitering job starts at 9 o'clock and they can daven at a Hashkama Minyan and they learn that they, just like when they get older, they may need to daven at a Hashkama Minyan on time. So maybe that's an opportunity, I would say, that parents can say, you want to, you know, if you work out the Scar Shabbos details.
Right, which is the other
separate,
issue.
Right,
which
like there's the a whole issue. Separate.
The issue of them working on Shabbos and it's a complicated halachic issue of how you can make money off of working on Shabbos. And when there is an option for our community to have something else besides our children working and earning money on Shabbos,
it is
a failing of our community.
Okay, maybe we'll take just a couple of moments for anybody who has a specific question that we want to bring to the table while we have this special environment. Yeah, the Vakasha. Rabbi Kupchik.
David.
Yes. David Kupchik.
No, that was my father, Olam Shalom. David Kupchik.
Hi. You were saying about your parents about saying that they didn't say, you know, they weren't open about saying, I love you, Hippo, whatever, when you were leaving. Would you have hoped that they would have said something like that when you were leaving?
No.
Well, I love you.
I think that what I had in mind is that there are different ways of being able to communicate to your child that you care, that you're there for them. If a parent spends time, as Rabbi Brand made reference to, a parent playing ball, you know, with their child, that's a... And you might be thinking they'd rather be doing something else. This is what they want, you know, they really want to be doing. But if they do it, that means that's a way of saying, I am going to put aside, you know, my needs and do something, you know, for you. I still have this memory. A lot of it comes down to sports, but both my parents, I remember it took me once to a doubleheader New York Yankees game in Shea Stadium because they were doing construction on the old Yankee Stadium. And I remember my mom sitting there doing knitting. And that, you know, she had no interest, you know, whatsoever. But it's called family time. And she came because it's important to us to just be there together. Listen, there are books that write about the importance of, family meal time together. Families that eat together, you know, stick together. And even if, you know, you're able to do that when the kids were younger, and even if you can't do it every night, but the fact that it was in their system, and then you do it even, you know, one night a week, okay, they get that people are juggling more, but you still give value to it. Or we have not a rule that's etched in stone, but close to it that, you know, Friday nights we don't typically, accept, let's say offers to eat out, is that, listen, let's have family time, you know, together. And that I think is what I had in mind. But that there are different ways of communicating the message. But the important is that the message was given. And I knew it. I'm the child, and I knew it. So it worked for me.
Any other?
So, more Rabbi, the take is a short off. So you brought up youth minyanim, right? And what are your feelings about the value of youth minyanim versus davening next to a parent?
I think that there needs to be a balance. The advantage of a youth minyan, especially in larger shuls, is that the youth are able to take roles in leadership. I grew up, and when I went to high school, I was davening the Bnei Akiva minyan. And that's where I learned how to be a gavai, and that's where I learned how to do this and do that, and we took the responsibility. I think there's great value for that. I also think that we have lost something in our community by bringing children to shul as young as we do. It is not necessarily, for some families today, because we have an Eruv, families will bring the children for babysitting. And they may not be ready for shul, and they may not learn how to behave in a shul. But the youth minyanim, when it comes to the high school age, maybe even middle school, if they know how to daven and they're taking that leadership role, but those minyanim also have to be supervised by the right kind of people who are able to make that opportunity, and there has to be that kind of balance.
I didn't get that.
I'm sorry.
Could you try again?
Okay, didn't get it, but I'm not trying to get it.
Maybe I could echo what Rabbi Metanky said, just from my own experience in closing, is that there is the role modeling component, which maybe you could argue is even the dominant element. If you see a parent, whether it's a mother or a father, and that parent takes tefillah seriously and shows up on time, or makes the attempt to show up on time and really connects to the davening. So having a child see that in a parent is very valuable. But I remember when I was a child, our shtiebel didn't have any groups, didn't have any, we played capture the flag outside in the bushes. Like, there was no youth groups. But we would go on occasion to Far Rockaway, to the white shul, which was like a big established shul. They had it was like a pre-youth minyan. They had a gabbai, Mr. Schlissel, Zichrono Levracha. He had little kids. We were like 7 or 8 years old. He had a little pretend Sefer Torah, one of those Simchas Torah Sefer Torahs. So you would have one guy who was one little 8-year-old kid who pretends he's the gabbai, another guy pretends he's the chaz, another one pretends he's the bal kore, and they show you how to move the thing with a yad. So once every, whatever it was, 6 months or 12 months that we went there, we had a different kind of tefillah experience. So, even at as young as 8 years old or 7 years old, that can leave a roshim on a child to say, I have my chelek in davening, but at the same time, it doesn't usurp the role that the parent plays in terms of the role modeling. So obviously, there's a lot more to say, but we just want to thank you for taking the time to share some of this personal perspective in addition to your communal and professional roles. We thank everybody for coming, and we look forward to continuing to find ways to inspire each other and inspire our children. So thank you. Thank you.